Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I am Fanny Crawford.
And I am Stasi Okowski.
And we are broadcasting from Hagerstown, Maryland, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Bolivar, West Virginia. And our theme today on Monday, November 13th, is local heroes. So yes, You're going to hear about some important people.
Oh.
How was your weekend, Stosh?
It was a wonderful weekend. I got to see my 11-year-old grandson, John, play soccer on Saturday, and then we had a wonderful lunch with him and his mother. And they won the league. Their league was it's a rec league. They played 8 games, and they had a record of 5 wins, 2 ties, and 1 loss, only 1 loss. And so they were the league champions. And he's continued to develop in his soccer skills. He is by far the smallest guy on his team, but he's pretty good at defending and getting his foot on the ball. And he's made a couple of really nice stops. And his team won 4-3, and they won the championship. So we had a nice celebration lunch and everything. And then yesterday we went to the Maryland Theater in Hagerstown, and saw a wonderful performance by the Maryland Symphony, which was led by a woman conductor who's been their conductor for a while. Uh-huh. It was the first time I've ever seen a woman conducting a symphony.
All right.
And she was, I thought
Elizabeth,
she was.
Elizabeth, right?
I don't think I remember her name.
I can't remember her last name, but her first name.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was beautifully dressed, of course, black, and a nice, a dress, sort of. And not really. Let's see. No, I think she had slacks on. Anyway, but I was fascinated watching her because, boy, it kept reminding me through the 2-hour performance, except for a short intermission. She had to know every single note.
Of course.
Because her arm motions and her hands and her head and everything were so in tune with the music. And I was thinking, boy, that's a lot. It's one thing to know music in a single, you know, song, or for 10 single songs. Because I hear that from Terry all the time. Terry knows hundreds of songs, and, you know, she knows the words and everything. But to know the music for something that goes on for 25 minutes. Up and down and over, right? You know, it's really good. And the other thing that I noticed is, and I me with numbers, I like to count things. There were a total of 58 musicians on stage, plus the conductor. There were 31 women. I've never seen an orchestra where there were that many women.
Okay.
And I've gone to a lot of performances of orchestras and things since I met Terry. And I was impressed with that, you know. And some of the featured players were women. The oboist, who had a couple of wonderful solos. Of course, I always pay attention to oboists because I played the oboe in high school. And not well, but decently enough. Enough that I was able to stay in school. And Terry also played the oboe in school for a while. But anyway, I like to listen to the oboe and the flutes. And it was really wonderful. So a great concert. The only trouble was steps. I did ride the elevator because we were upstairs in the balcony, but then there were steps going up to the level we were on, and then going down to our seats. And I thought, Boy, without my cane, I would be terrified. I was scared anyway, because I thought, one misstep and I will go right over that balcony and fall 45 or 50 feet into the audience.
Well, I'm glad you didn't do that.
I know, because it was a drastic angle. And
yeah,
and the railing at the balcony was right about where my knees are. I wouldn't have been able to stop myself if I had stumbled down, you know. And there were a lot of older people there, you know. I was like, whoa. But the steps were a real challenge. I had a hard time going up the steps. Down the steps were scary because of the angle. But going up was much harder on my legs. And it was, you know.
Well, it's still probably good practice.
Oh, yeah. It's good exercise. I mean, one of my exercises is to use the steps.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there you go.
And stretch your legs on the steps and all that stuff. So. And they're trying to get me to get my legs back in shape. And it's every morning I feel pretty good. And then as the day goes on, I keep thinking, this is like I have this image of my legs being sort of, this is kind of weird. But you know, the timers, you know, the sand timers.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what it feels like. Hourglass.
Hourglass. Yeah, the hourglass. See, that. Thank you for knowing those words. Appreciate it. As the day goes on, I have this feeling that the sand in my hourglass is going down, and my legs get heavier and more tired, and I think, oh, if I was really a good artist, I would like to draw a picture of my legs as the sand fills up.
You are a word artist. You're going to do a story.
Yeah. Well. Maybe I'll do a story on that. Anyway, we had a wonderful weekend, and there's a little promotion. Pittsburgh Steelers won again, which is great. They're doing real well, and the Ravens lost. Yay! In
you
the
are
last
just
minute.
Mean.
Oh, no, I'm not mean. I just because we're in the same. Division with them, you know, and so, and they've been touted as a possible Super Bowl champs, but I was glad to see that they lost. Our record is almost as good as theirs.
Okay, well, let's avoid further conflict by moving on to speak.
Okay, no conflict. I was just making a report.
Football's all about conflict.
Oh, well, sure.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that was the whole basis of it. Hey, let's pick up a game that we can play so we can run into each other to punch and hit, you know.
War games. Okay, so speak.
All right. Tomorrow, November 14th, Bill Harley. Are you going to go to the performance tomorrow?
I will be watching it. I don't think I'll be there, but you never know.
Yeah, we're going to go on Wednesday. Because tomorrow I have a couple of things going. I have physical therapy in it. And at the end of the day, I'll be exhausted. And so we're going to go on Wednesday when I have little to do.
That's good.
And I'll save up my energy.
Take care of yourself. Okay.
Yes. So
I'll be there to take care of Bill Harley.
Oh, good. So, okay. Okay. So anyway, Bill Harley is going to be here. And he's a wonderful performer, a Grammy Award winner, and a great entertainer, great storyteller, and a musician. And I'm looking forward to Wednesday because he's going to be telling a story of the Iliad,
right,
which is going to be a little bit more serious than what he'll do on Tuesday. And
this is the last session of the season, right?
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah. And I'll get to see some of my friends that I don't see much anymore because I'm not on the board. And anyway, it'll be nice. I always enjoy Mr. Harley, and I'll enjoy seeing Adam and some others, Carolyn Rodas and friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think today's topic is a good one. Are you going to lead off today?
I can. That works.
Yeah.
Okay, so our theme today is local heroes. And I'm going to be sharing, I'm going to share the stories of three of my heroes, three best friends since elementary school with each other, Virginia, Marie, and June, all began a health journey together many years after high school. So this is 1976, 47 years ago, when they were in their 60s. They were all suffering from a variety of health ailments, and their doctors were telling them they had to lose weight now, or things would be getting much worse, much faster. Well, it didn't start right away. Marie was the first to join TOPS, T-O-P-S, Take Off Pounds Sensibly, chapter 0308 in Hagerstown. And she soon convinced Virginia and June to sign up with her. And together, they would meet three times a week outside of the actual official TOPS meeting to walk 2 or 3 miles together. They agreed they would all keep what we call eat sheets. They wrote down everything that went into their mouths. And it took them 6 to 9 months, but every one of them did it, losing between 30 and 60 pounds each. They became COPS, K-O-P-S, Keep Off Pounds Sensibly. And with a few slip-ups over the next 40 years, 40 plus years, they managed to keep it all off. Well, I'm going to start with a story from Marie, because she was the one who also welcomed me into this group. So they all remained members of COPS 0308 over the years. They saw each other regularly on Thursday afternoons or evenings, because the time has changed over the years due to retirements and the changing ages and needs of all of the members of the group. You know, the group has sometimes been as many as 25, 27 people, all the way down to 4 members, which is the minimum needed to maintain our chapter. But all this time, those three women have been the backbone of this local group. But Marie has always been the welcoming face, the smiling grandmother. All three of these women are grandmas. But I always felt that it was Marie who shepherded me into the group. I didn't know anybody there when I first arrived with my daughter, Rachel. And my personal goal was to lose 30 pounds. Marie told me I could do that easily. She herself had done that in the 70s. And now it only took Marie about 6 months to reach her goal. It took me 4 years, but I did it, and I've kept it off since then. Now those three women, Marie, June, and Virginia — Virginia is still with us. The other two have died in the meantime, which is part of my reason for talking about them. I do miss them. But those three, Marie, June, and Virginia, never let me forget what I was there to accomplish at TOPS 0308. And they clearly believed that I would get there. I didn't have a choice. I didn't want to let them down. There was no question that I was going to drop out or not make my goal. I've always been envious of Marie's large and loving extended family. I think it's partly this family that helped make her who she became. She was the presiding elder and matriarch of this group, this family household. And when Marie's husband, Henry, died, Marie's son, Donnie, and his wife, Mary, convinced Marie to move to Smithsburg, where they had found a house to buy, a big rambling brick house with a big porch that was connected to a smaller ranch house. And the ranch house had been a doctor's office, but was now annexed to that main house. There were rooms that went and a hallway that went behind the two houses and connected them. So it was really a residential complex, and they had turned that ranch house into a home for Marie. So they all moved there together, three generations that soon became four generations. And when I met Marie, there were 12 or 13 people living there together in this house, plus two dogs and a cat. So Marie, Donnie, Mary, Matthew, Leslie, Alex, Donovan, Jess, Taya, Lily, Aria, and one more little boy whose name I cannot remember. Marie's work over the years, she was a cake decorator, she was a seamstress, she was a floral arranger, but cakes were her passion for a long time, decorating cakes. And in spite of that, she managed to separate her passion for decorating cakes, to separate that from eating cake, because she was a COPS for many, many, many years and was still a COPS at the end of her life, maintaining her weight goal of keeping off pounds sensibly. Only a few slip ups from time to time for the rest of her life, almost 45 years. I'm gonna share one of Marie's stories. We put together a little book at one point of Thanksgiving stories, and that's kind of what gave me the idea for talking about these local heroes of mine. So let's see if I can recreate Marie's voice. Well, one year at Thanksgiving, I started making our big dinner, but I fell ill and couldn't go on. My husband, Henry, and my mother had to finish cooking everything. Now, Thanksgiving, Henry's folks wouldn't come till after the Macy's parade was over on television, so timing for dinner always depended on their arrival. Henry's father was a stickler. Dinner had to be 12 o'clock, noon, sharp. And they were hard pressed to finish in time that year. That year I couldn't help. But I wanted to tell you, Henry used to help my mother make scalloped oysters because that was her favorite. Henry didn't eat oysters. When Mom passed away, he made them for everybody else for holidays, but he never ate them. Hot dogs, bacon, and ham were the only meats Henry ever ate. Every night for dinner, I cooked one of those, hot dogs most nights, no matter what the rest of us were having. It wasn't until the 1980s that he discovered beef tacos, and then he added beef tacos to his menu. Well, this Thanksgiving, I'll help Mary with the cooking and probably make baked apples to go with the turkey. We always get a bushel of apples to put up apple butter, but this time we couldn't find the canning lids any place. I did make applesauce and put that in the freezer. This is one of my favorite times of the year, putting up all that food for the winter. But what I like best is all the family, all the grands and great grands coming for Thanksgiving. You know, we have almost 12 here with us most weeks, but this week, most all my children, grands and great grands, will either drive or fly in, and they won't expect those baked apples. So I did save some of that bushel for them. And if they come all this way, the least I can do is make sure we have those baked apples that they like. So that's my local hero, Marie. And then there's June. Now June Stallings was one of those tell it as she sees it grandmas. And she was gonna tell you whether you wanted to hear it or not. She made her COPS goal, keep off pounds sensibly, back in 1976, right along with Marie and her cousin Virginia. They were a threesome, high school friends. And June maintained that weight loss with just a few slip ups, as we say, for the rest of her life. I have to credit June for being the gadfly that really got me over the hump to getting myself to COP status in 2012. 2012 was 4 years after I first joined TOPS 0308. And just like all three of those grandmas, June was supportive and steadfast in her apparent belief that I was going to make my goal. I just was not serious enough about giving up my chocolate binges and my strawberry ice cream, fresh homemade bread, and my dad's biscuit recipe. But at Thanksgiving in 2012, June put her hands on her hips one afternoon at our TOPS meeting, as she was wont to do, and said, "What is it with you, Fanny? You said you wanted to lose 30 pounds, and you've been this close, within 3 pounds of your COPS goal, more than 2 years. What's the problem here?" And I had to admit, there really was no problem. I was just okay with being slightly overweight if it meant I could go on eating everything I wanted to eat. Now, June wasn't about to let me wander in the wilderness that way. She wanted me to get serious and be a good role model for people in our group who had very serious health problems and really did need to lose their extra weight to save their own lives. She knew I could do it if I just got serious. She thought I owed it to my fellow TOPS members to stop fooling around, and she told me so. And that got me off my butt. It got me serious about food journaling, those eat sheets, and actually planning what I'd eat each day and recording what went into my mouth, and about getting in vigorous exercise 3 times a week. And that conversation was Thanksgiving week. So just about 5 to 6 weeks till the new year. And sure enough, just as June predicted, at the first weigh-in of 2013, I made my goal. Now I'm gonna try to play a song that June asked to be sung at her memorial service when she died in December, 9 years later, 2022. It made me cry then. The ceremony was right in the sanctuary of the church where our TOPS meetings are. June and Virginia were both members of that church. So I may shed a few more tears today, but this song is for June Spielman Stallings. I should tell you, Mike Schillingberg, who's a member of that church, sang this song at the service. I'm just gonna play the last chorus of Donna Taggart singing. I don't have a recording of Mike Schillingberg, so this is Donna Taggart singing the last chorus of Jealous of the Angels.
Jealous of the angels around the throne tonight.
No, sir. Well, I'm not sure that actually was audible.
No.
Sasha's shaking his head. That's too bad. Okay.
Maybe you could say the words.
It's just hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. But in a beautiful singing voice that I thought I might reproduce, but that's not going to happen.
Okay.
So if you want to hear the whole song, it's right. Donna Taggart singing, "I'm just jealous of the," singing Jealous of the Angels.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
the last chorus. Hallelujah, okay. Hallelujah, hallelujah. I'm just jealous of the angels around the throne tonight. And it's, okay. You know, it's a Christian song, a religious song,
sure.
But it was beautiful. And that was the first time I had ever heard it when I heard
right.
it. Okay, one more quick story.
Okay.
So I need to tell you about Virginia. Virginia Rogers is the sole surviving grandma of the three grandmas, these grandmother heroes, who've kept our TOPS chapter 0308 going for 47 years. And I've only been a member since 2008, so 15 years. And our membership has varied over that time, as I said earlier. But these three ladies have been the backbone of this local group. TOPS stands for Take Off Pounds Sensibly, and that's what I've done there. That's what I managed to accomplish and keep it off, become a COPS, Keep Off Pounds Sensibly, as have most of the women and a handful of men who've come through the doors of that church where we meet in Hagerstown. Georgia Virginia Rogers has held many different official roles. She has been chapter leader, chapter secretary, weight recorder, et cetera. But my favorite role for her has been as our official grandmother in charge of laughter. We actually gave her the title Grandmother Laughter. She's been our humor guardian for several years. And every week, about 4 years of the 47 that she's been a TOPS and a COPS, she would read a page of riddles, jokes, and funny anecdotes. And even when these pieces were more silly or ridiculous than anything else, she would deliver them in a way that just made us laugh and laugh. She still makes us laugh every time we see her. She's led us in dancing to her little 8-inch plastic flashing jukebox that plays old Motown and rock and roll hits. And this is a woman who's 95 this year. And as many of us who are stiff at age 70, me, she can still boogie with the best of them. Now, Virginia has always been a bundle of energy. As late as last year, when she turned 94, she was still mopping and waxing the floors of her house every week and cleaning out her closets every month and faithfully attending every Thursday afternoon TOPS meeting to keep an eye on us neophytes. So I brought along a sample of one of Virginia's weekly humor offerings. So here's just a quick run through of sample of what Virginia might say at a regular meeting. Your pants won't get too tight if you don't wear any. Trail mix. Trail mix is a very inconvenient way to eat M&Ms. If we weren't meant to have midnight snacks, there wouldn't be a light in the fridge. I finally heard some good news. I was relieved to figure out I'm not overweight. I'm under tall. I've removed all the food from the house that might get me in trouble. It was delicious. My brain said crunches, but my stomach auto-corrected it to cupcakes. That's what happens every time I try to exercise. Have you heard of the garlic diet? You don't lose much weight, but from a distance, your friends think you look thinner. What I overheard at the gym today, I'm only taking this exercise class so I don't eat for the next hour. I went shopping for a bathroom scale. The salesman tried to sell me one that tracks not only weight, but also body fat, bone mass, and water percentage. I said, no thanks, and chose a low-tech model. I told the salesperson, I don't need to be depressed four ways. One is enough. I discovered a shortcut today. If you put your pedometer in the dryer, you can get a head start on your steps. I had 3,800 steps in before I put on my pants. That's Virginia.
They're wonderful.
They are wonderful. Okay, I'm going to be quiet now. We're okay. having a big open house at 0308 on Thursday. All right.
I want to make a little announcement.
Okay.
To get information about speakstoryseries.com, tomorrow and Wednesday are the last two performances of the year. But you can get information about costs for tickets, about the possibilities if you want to donate, and also about the future for next year's programs. And I think at this time we should thank Andy Offit-Irwin for opening the show with Terry Here, his wonderful original composition, which he performs for us every week. It's amazing. All the way from Georgia and sometimes from the West Coast and East Coast, we get to hear his wonderful voice and his guitar playing to begin our storytelling session.
What a guy.
What a great guy.
And, I'm glad you did that stuff.
Yes. And also, I think you should mention Stories in the Round coming up.
Well, all right. That's November 27th. And our featured storyteller on November 27th at 7 p.m. is Adam Booth, who's closing out the season for us. And if you want tickets or you want more information, you can call me at 301-730-1638. Or you can email me at Fanitsky, FANITSKY at hotmail.com.
There you go.
And that's all I have to say about that.
And I and my wife will be there.
I'm so relieved to know that.
Yes.
Because you're the one who sits at the desk and makes sure everybody behaves.
Yes.
Within broad parameters.
Yes, right. Okay. Well, I know there are two ladies, and I don't want to mess up their names, so I might forget them. But there are two of your stalwart people who they're all the time, and I always think I better behave myself because I notice them sometimes looking at me, and I think, are they checking up on me?
All the ladies look at you, Stash.
No, these two are regulars at Stories in the Round. And anyway, and that's good because I need somebody to check on me once in a while. Okay, so I'm going to tell a story about a local hero. And this is first of all, I want to mention two people who I think are local heroes right now in this day and age. And one of them is John Case because he has this wonderful radio program that we are allowed to do, that especially that I am allowed to do since 2017, that you invited me to become and be your partner on the radio. And I didn't realize it was going to be like this, a partnership. I thought it was going to be, one, two, three times. And here it is, hundreds of shows we've done.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely wonderful. And the other person who is a local hero of mine, and I mean this sincerely, is Fanny Crawford. Because you and...
It's not fair.
It is fair. Because you run Stories in the Round. And you don't get a cent from it.
Well,
I know that.
If I tell. If I'm the teller, I do.
If you what?
If you're the teller.
Yeah, but you're not the teller every week. Or
no.
Every month and hardly every year, ever. Even
okay,
hardly ever. So you get no money for it. You do a lot of work, a lot of preparation, a lot of setup, and then you take care of chairs, you organize things, and everything works beautifully. I've been to many times to the Stories in the Round as a guest. I performed there a number of times, and it's always impressive how nicely everything runs. And it's because of you. And I know you have people that help you. However, you're the person that has Stories in and around and has it going. And that is heroic in my sense to me, because I know what it's like to run a program. You do great work. So there you go.
Thank you. Well, that's who those two ladies. What I was going to say is I don't do it by myself. There are a lot of volunteers, including you. So let's give credit where credit's due. And those two ladies who are keeping an eagle eye on you, they're probably volunteers too. they're the bouncers.
But I appreciate it because I know what it's like to run any kind of program, and you do a wonderful job. And you're very highly regarded in the community by many people who love storytelling.
And don't know any better.
There you go. Well, sometimes it's good not to know anything better than what you know.
The sausage making behind the scene. Okay.
There you go. Okay. When I was a young person, this may not be popular with some people, but I'm going to say it anyway. There were police officers walking a beat. And in our neighborhood, there were guys that were, to me, were real heroes. They kept us out of trouble. If they saw us doing something, I mean, it was only one person at a time. Usually you could see one police officer, but we saw him every day. And there were more than one of them, but it was one cop walking a beat. And if you were doing something that looked sketchy, the officer might say, "Hey, what's up there today?" You know, and they always knew my name. They knew my friends' names too, you know. Say, "Hey, Bob, how are you doing today?" And when we were young, it really shocked me the first time. A lot of people didn't know my nickname was Stosh. Only my friends knew that, or in school. But the first time a police officer said to me, "Stosh, how are you doing today?" I was shocked. I thought, how does he know me? You know? But anyway, I always respected the police because they did a good job of keeping us out of trouble, reminding us just by their presence that, you know, you guys playing the ball today? Let's see, you're behaving yourselves. That's good. You know, don't break any windows. And they would joke with us and everything, you know. And I always thought that was wonderful. I had growing up, a friend of my brother's, my brother Tony had a friend who was about his age, and his name was Lucky. He became a police officer, and I was really impressed because he was a kid who grew up in our neighborhood and did things like we did, and then he joined the police, and he became a police officer. And at first, seeing him in his policeman's clothes was like, whoa, who does he think he is? But he became who he thought he wanted to be, and he was a good police officer. He didn't actually work in our direct community, but he did lots of nice things in the community where he did work. And I remember as I went into the Army, came back home, that I heard stories about how Lucky had helped different people. And I got to see him once when I guess I was in my mid-20s, and he was probably closer to 30, and got to talk to him, and he was in a patrol car, and I happened to see him at a stoplight, and he and his partner pulled over, and he got out and shook hands with me, and we had a really nice talk. He introduced me to his partner, said they couldn't spend much time talking. They had to be busy on patrol, but it was really impressive, you know. And I always feel bad about the policemen nowadays because they have such a hard job, such a difficult job. I don't ever remember hearing anybody that was a police officer that I got to know or meet or anything, whoever drew their gun. I'm sure they may have at sometimes, but there wasn't all the crazy stuff going on when I was a kid. I don't remember people being killed in Baltimore. I don't remember anybody in my neighborhood being killed. There were occasionally somebody murdered or something, but it was always like way, way, way in the distance away from us. Our neighborhood where I grew up was in Fells Point was nice and safe, even though it had a rough area there because of the docks. I always felt safe. I walked from my house, I walked Fort McHenry. I walked downtown in Baltimore, even as a 10-year-old. I remember walking all the way to Howard Street, which was 3 miles away from my house. And I always felt really safe. Once, when I was in high school, a boy by the name of Stephen and I both brought guns to school. Mine was a pistol, was a toy pistol. It looked like a gun. It looked like a real gun, but it wasn't. It was plastic or, you know, some kind of stuff. And we decided that we were going to, and we talked about this on a Friday, and on Monday we did it. Only he brought his brother's gun, a real gun. And after school, we had him in our lockers. We didn't dare carry him during the school day. But after school, we were walking down Howard Street. And on our way towards Pratt, where we would turn and go along the Inner Harbor, which in those days was not as fancy as it is now. And all of a sudden, a car pulled up to the curb. A man got out of the car and grabbed both of us. We had been standing in front of a store, and we had these guns in our hand. And we were talking facing the store windows. We were talking as if we were going to rob the store. We were playing. We were ninth graders playing in a stupid game. And it was around Christmas time. And we were saying, yeah, if we wanted to rob the store, get some money for Christmas and all, we could go in right now, just point the guns and say, give us the money and grab the money and run. Anyway, this guy had his hand on both our shoulders and said, stand still, boys. Just lift those guns up carefully where I can see them. And he reached over, took one from Stephen, took one from me, said, get in the car. Oh, and he introduced himself. I don't remember his name now because I was scared to death. I don't know. I couldn't remember what the temperature was like. It might have been snowing. It could have been raining. It could have been sunshine. Who knows? I was terrified. He put us in the back seat of his car, and he drove down near the morgue, almost to Little Italy. And he said, why were you guys, where are these guns from? You know, I said, mine's just a toy. It's, you know, we were just pretending. We were talking about, you know, what it was like to be gangsters and all, but we weren't going to do anything. And he said, well, this other gun, he said, I can see it looks like it's not, doesn't work very well. The trigger is loose and everything, but why are you carrying a real gun to Stephen? Stephen said, I think that's a gun that my brother either found or stole sometime, and he's away. He's older. He's in the Army, and I don't even think he remembers that he had it, but I knew where he had kept stuff in his room, and I just used to borrow it once in a while, fooling around. And the policeman said, I don't think you guys should be walking around with stuff like this. And he said, I think you need to learn a lesson. And we were both terrified. We thought he's going to take us home to our parents. And boy, will we get in trouble then. I know my father would have been really furious. And Stephen's father would have been. But he said, I think I'll just teach you a lesson. And then, I'm not going to take you home to your parents. But I want you to watch this. And right where the morgue was in Baltimore, there was a street, like almost like an alley, and you could walk across that small street and stand right there and look into the harbor. He walked over with us and he said, watch this. He took those two guns one at a time, tossed them into the harbor. I couldn't believe it. And Stephen said, oh, what am I going to tell my brother? He said, don't tell your brother anything. Your brother doesn't know you've been stealing his gun and fooling around with it. If it's missing, you don't know anything about it. And he just smiled at us. And he said, I guess you guys can find your own way home. Yes. Okay, behave yourselves. No more guns. Got in his car and drove off. we were so thankful that he was a nice man. You know, if he had taken either one of us home to our parents, we would have been in real trouble. But he didn't, and that was a real nice thing. And it was a good lesson. It really was a nice thing to learn, that you shouldn't do stuff like that, where we could have caused all kind of trouble. If somebody in that store had thought we were planning on robbing it, they might have done something terrible to us. Anyway, I always appreciated that policeman.
Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah, and that's true. I'm telling you, it was fun until the guy put his hand on our shoulders.
Did you know that you were at the morgue?
Oh, yeah, we knew that. In fact, when he pulled over there, he parked right in front of it. When he pulled over there, we were thinking, you know, I don't know. Later, Stephen and I talked about, I said, well, what did you think? He said, I didn't want to think. I didn't know what was going on. I was scared. So, anyway, it was
a good idea. You thought he was going to show you somebody who'd been shot?
I had no idea. I just didn't want to go in that building. I didn't know anything about the morgue except what I thought in my mind and what I read in stories and what the TV would show. So anyway, I thought that was a really good lesson, and the guy handled it well. He didn't give us a hard time and rant and rave and call us names or say mean stuff to us. He just talked very calmly and explained that we were doing something that wasn't not very intelligent. And he said, I was tempted. At one point, he did say, where do you go to school? And we both looked at him and he said, oh, you don't want to tell me, do you? And I, well, and he said, you guys are dressed. And I said, I bet you go to a Catholic school. Oh, boy, you would get in trouble if they found out. And, we were like, oh, no, don't tell them. Don't tell the brothers we went to a Christian brother school. We would get in big trouble. Anyway, so to me, he was a hero because he was, he handled the situation in such a nice way. And nowadays, I would really worry about what would happen to two kids who had a gun, even if it was a fake gun, and a policeman saw them on the streets with it. They might get in trouble.
What a great story.
Woo! Oh.
You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stas Ziolkowski.
And our theme today is local heroes. Ooh, very different stories. Interesting experience.
Yeah.
I think yours takes the cake, Stas. So,
well, I have another one.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know if you may have heard this lady's name, this one, but when I was in elementary school, I went to Catholic school all my life, all the way from kindergarten through college. And I was raised that it was okay to speak up and say things if you really believed in them, as long as you were polite and everything. So sometimes I would get in trouble in class because the nuns would say things that I thought were just crazy. I remember one of my nuns told us about something about 3 days of darkness. And I think she made this up. Some of the nuns where I went to school came from Poland and were educated in Lodi, New Jersey at the convent there. And then became teachers. And I'm guessing that they went to some kind of preparation, but I don't know what it was. So I can't even imagine what it was because I don't know. And I think they were decent teachers because I learned to read and write and count and stuff. But sometimes they would say strange things. And I remember this nun said that there were going to be 3 days of darkness and that any children who were not good children, any bad children who would be out on the streets during those days of darkness, they might be picked up by flying devils who would carry a pitchfork and grab us and carry us off.
Holy cow!
And I laughed, and a nun looked at me. So, what are you laughing at? I said, that doesn't make any sense. There are no flying devils going around with pitchforks. And I was in fifth grade. And, you know, I was sent to the office. Well, and that's where the hero in this story was, because I was sent to Sister Christophine a number of times, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade. I know. And each time, Sister Christophine had a unique way of dealing with Stash. I have no idea what she was like with the other kids. But from the first time I was sent to her, she said, "Hello, I know you, you're Stash. Do you have a message for me?" And I was shocked because I was expecting to get, I thought I was going to get paddled or something. And I said, "No, sister, I was told to come here because I spoke up in class and said something." She said, "Really?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Tell me about that." So I told her about it. And she had a handkerchief. And the nuns always kept handkerchiefs in their sleeves of their habit, which I thought was really neat. I used to try that. I could never manage it. I put a handkerchief in my sleeve. It would get lost. Sometimes it would be up in my armpit. Anyway, and I did that as a kid. But she would took out this handkerchief and had it in front of her mouth and was like, I think she was hiding her laughter. I think she was chuckling underneath that handkerchief. But anyway, she said, well, I'm glad you're here. You know, I need some help this morning. She said, do you know, what, you're fifth grade? I'd say, yes, your sister. She said, I knew that. I just like to check. And she said, could you file these cards for me? They go in that cabinet and it's alphabetical. So, and these are some cards. Just don't bother reading them, but the names were on them. You could just put them in the correct order. And so I spent about, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes putting these cards in order and everything. And she would say things now and then. And she asked me about how school was going and, you know, and all this stuff. And then after about a half an hour, she said, "I think you should go back to class now. And thanks for your help. I appreciate it." And sent me off. And I was like, what the heck was that about? Well, over the next couple of years, I found out Sister Christophine's way of dealing with, I guess, troublemakers or kids who spoke up when they probably should have been able to hold their tongue. And I don't know about other kids, but every time I went to her, except once when I had hit two eighth graders with my belt because they knocked over a little girl. And I just got furious and knocked one of them down, and the other one came over towards me. And I was little, but I knew how to protect myself. I took off my belt and I smacked him a couple of times, and the other one got up. I smacked him a couple of times, and then a nun came over and grabbed me, and I got in trouble. My father had to go and see Sister Christophine, but I got punished for that. But my father stood up for me, and Sister Christophine gave me what she gave me as a punishment was, "I'm going to let your father take care of this," which was really good, because my dad never hit me. My dad was strict, but he never ever laid a hand on me. And I don't know why for sure, because I was the only one in the family who didn't get hit. He never hit my mother either, but he did hit the other three children who are all older than me. Anyway, Sister Christophine was just wonderful. And I always think of her as a hero because she dealt with troubled kids and taught me. As a teacher for 40 years, I tried to emulate her. If a kid got in trouble in my class, I would try not to be such a hard head. And I would try to find a way to ease the situation. Sometimes I would have to send them to the office, or sometimes I would punish them in some way. But I always tried to emulate Sister Christophine because she had a kindness and a generosity in her heart. And when I was in eighth grade, she passed away. And that was a real shock. She was one of the first people who I got to know a bit because of my visits to her office. And also because she was the principal of the school, and it was somebody I knew close up. And it wasn't like an old person who died from an illness or something. I remember being very sad about her passing away, because I always thought of her as the one of the nicest people I ever met.
Good story. I think I've heard you talk about Sister Christophine before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she had a very pretty face. I was always amazed when I would see some nuns who had a very pretty face, because I would try to imagine what they would be like without the costume or their outfit, not costume.
You know. Did you ever try to reconstruct a habit or a habit-like thing on your own head?
Oh, so, my goodness, yeah. I performed on a stage. As a child, no. God, no. I would have thought that was blasphemous as a child. That now, when I think of it, I should have dressed up as a nun for Halloween or something. But I didn't. My mother wouldn't have let me do that.
Did you think talking or dismissing devils with pitchforks flying around picking up children was being dismissive of that, that was blasphemous?
No. No, I thought that she was crazy, because I don't believe in devils flying around with pitchforks, you know. I did believe a lot of things they taught me as a Catholic, but I eventually lost all those beliefs.
Okay.
When I was old enough to start reading on my own and thinking on my own, I moved away from the church. Churches are good things. Religion is, I don't like religions. Too many people have suffered in the name of religions. But church people do a lot of good things, as you well know. Like those two ladies who keep their eye on me when I'm at the table.
Oh, okay. Okay, I think we're out of time.
Oh, I went and out of it.
It's time for me to say our closing.
Oh, okay.
This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stasi Okowski.
Your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. You know, we are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. And we're trying to offer our listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, but encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. It's been fun. Thanks for listening to our stories about local heroes today. And